Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. My guest today is Jacqueline Taylor, and she has not arrived into the studio just yet. She's running a little late, so in the meantime, I don't know what we're going to do. You know, it can be quite frustrating and freaky in a particular situation, especially when you've got no freaking food in the house, when your shoes have got holes in them, and you're running out of hard drive space. Yeah, that's a big one. So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, just bear in mind that this is a listener-supported broadcast. It's done on virtually the whiff of a hint of an oily rag. You know what I'm saying? So I need new shoes, badly need new shoes, need some running shoes and some dress shoes. So I think, you know, might be like $100 each for a decent pair that'll actually last me a little while. So if anybody's capable of donating there, that'd be nice. The other necessities of the show in recent times is going to be external hard drive space. I saw a 4 terabyte external hard drive, which would probably last me a little more than a month. In terms of storing video footage and whatnot, and that's about $300. So basically, I need about $500 just to cover the physical things that I need. And on top of that, there's also the just ordinary expenses, you know, rent, food, gas, power, water, internet, etc., credit card bills, whatever. So if anybody can help out by going to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, I'd very much appreciate it. Now, if Jax is here, she could probably be in the living room, and I can't really kind of get up and go answer the phone because here she is. All right, come on, Jax, come and sit down. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're on air. So yeah, just come and sit down in this little chair here next to me, and we should have everything all hunky dory for you.
Awesome, and breakfast will now be lunch, people. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I had the kind of morning that I'm sure lots of people are having at the moment. Yep. Bombardment of information. And, basically getting my head straight around everything that's happening, and everything's obviously happening at a very fast pace these days. So, Vinny, we're going to talk about Syria.
Syria?
And the ever-changing situation.
You're serious about this, eh?
I am very serious about this because I've got so many of my friends and peers saying to me, oh, it's so far away, Jax, you know, what are we going to do? Should we do anything? We shouldn't probably do anything. And the worst thing about it is the information and the knowledge that is around about what's happening over there is constantly morphing, and the language around is constantly morphing. So the problem we have, I think, is the mainstream media is not our friend, which is why I'm here with lovely Vinny. The mainstream media is not our friend. And it's not giving us the kind of information that we need as New Zealanders to make the kind of decisions based on common sense. So whether that is our government or whether that is the people who should be helping them to make those decisions. And I understand that Mr. Key and Mr. McCulley yesterday are still reserving, but they're sounding a little bit hawkish to me. That's personal opinion.
Maybe. Sorry, hawkish, is that kind of like they sound like they've got spit in their mouth or something?
Well, no, to me they sound hawkish in the sense we may actually be looking at what America is saying more than we possibly could be following the same line of thought of Britain, unfortunately. Right. So that is a personal opinion. Please, don't anyone take that as any kind of official line. But the worry is we're not being told the truth, because everything that we are being told that is happening in Syria at the moment or in that region is actually on a delay. And there's an awful lot of misinformation around out there. And it is very easy, emotively, to jump on one bandwagon or the other. And for me personally, I would like to think that the children and the ordinary civilians in Syria are the ones that we should be worrying about, not the national security interests of countries like America, like Israel, like some of the others who are lining up and making comments about what should happen regarding intervention. Now, intervention with military weapons, where I come from, is war. All right, you can't be any clearer than that. So intervention selectively for a short period of time, whatever they like to call it, if you start loading Exocet missiles and firing them at places, that's war. And with people, the big players like Russia and Iran, America, France rattling its little, rattling its, you know, little sabers as well. I can't really see them following through.
What are they going to do? Send the Three Musketeers in?
But I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I would not have imagined for a minute that France, under a left-leaning Prime Minister, would be actually doing this. So we can look at it in a different way. We can look at it from the humanitarian. This word keeps coming up as well. Humanitarian is such a wonderful word until they abuse it. Now, humanitarianism has got nothing to do with weapons either. Mm. So if they wanted to do something humanitarian, what they should be doing is using all that money that they're loading up into Exocet missiles and drones and other things, whatever they're planning on doing, and actually put that into those refugee camps.
So, yeah, these people are turning the word humanitarian into, like, I don't know, some form of cannibalism, vegetarians eat vegetables, humanitarians. Yeah. And the other thing about this is we're talking about media misinformation, and people have no idea that the media engages in misinformation. They think misinformation is a beauty contest.
Well, I've just, funnily enough you say that, I've just been listening, unfortunately, to Radio Live. On the way in, and the worst thing about that was actually hearing myself described as a lefty or a hippie or whatever I'm supposed to be, or you're supposed to be, or anybody who's supposed to be, who basically disabuses themselves of the official line on anything.
Do you yell out and scream in the car when talk radio show hosts say something stupid? I did, until my radio broke.
No, I don't. Actually, what I probably do is eye roll and miss people waving at me because they say, Jax, I waved at you going down, sailing past Finney's Road.
I was too busy going to the mainstream media.
That's exactly it. I've given up screaming because I had the window open one time, actually, and I was yelling at something, and this guy just sort of looked at me through the window, and he really did think I was nuts. But going back to what you were saying there, that's so interesting. It is actually coming out, the fact that this misinformation is out there, and people are being caught out. Now, the difference is, as soon as something happens that follows the official line, it's all over One News, Three News here, whatever. Okay, it's all over the radio. It comes in headlines. It comes in sound bites. But it's funny that they ignore the things where they're caught doing the opposite, and we don't really hear about that. And that is because it's not in the public interest, apparently, to know that people are actually being paid, you know, as they will do in a sort of a capitalist world we live in now, to actually say things and do things which actually support some of the lines being followed. And I'd like to give you a really good example here. CNN were caught staging news segments in Syria. Now, you know, people go, oh, no, they can't possibly do that. You know, we're seeing all these dreadful pictures. It's really emotive. It's awful.
A lot of them are from Iraq.
Well, we've got those issues as well. So what we've got is we've got photojournalists and we've got other reporters going, hang on a minute, that photograph, that segment you used was actually from a previous or a different war. My daughter and I were actually watching something on Syria ourselves and looked at each other and went, recognise that little girl from that particular segment. And she was actually a little girl that was from Gaza when the Israelis were doing the last, thing that they did over there,
last
operation.
Gaza-Rinkers.
Yeah. So that was dreadful. And both of us looked at each other and shook our heads. On a more finite level, though, there are actually witnesses coming out now saying, look, these people have been paid to say these people have been paid to do this. And this is reminiscent of a time when we go back to the Iraq war, where can anybody remember that amazing picture of the statue of Saddam Hussein being toppled and all this cheering and oh, it was, you know, it's quite a moment. And I remember thinking, that's just so... oh, it's so Hollywood, without actually really taking that any further at the time. Mm. And then years later, actually finding out, well, no, it wasn't actually Hollywood, but it might as well have been, because it was in fact stage managed by a company paid by
all of these so-called Iraqis that were coming out waving Iraqi flags and cheering.
Yeah.
There were actually US troops that were of Arabian descent who just looked Iraqi.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, when we've got things like this happening, this is quite frightening. We've also got contradictions. We've got contradictions in the kind of words that are coming out. We've also got contradictions in what the leaders are saying. This is irrefutable evidence. Okay, show it to us. Well, no, we can't do that under security issues. It's this, that, and the other. No,
same
wait a minute.
Deal every time,
every single time. And the worry that we've got happening here is we have been asked in New Zealand, I want to bring it back to be relevant to us, we are being asked to give, so far, moral support. Well, define moral support, please. There is no morality in setting off Exocet missiles again, sending warships, except there is no moral support needed for something like that. You either support doing that or you don't. From a New Zealand point of view, I think it would be very difficult to say, well, yes, we support you firing off missiles into Syria in a punitive exercise. This is retribution. It is retribution for whoever has used these weapons, and there is no finite proof yet. I'm not supporting, believe me, I've been watching this for such a long time now. I am not supporting the Assad government. And I say, note, I say government, I don't say regime, because that is another word. How come something's a regime suddenly? Are we under a national regime? Possibly.
Yeah.
You know, these words are highly emotive
the
words
regime.
They use. Yeah, the Obama regime, exactly. And the interesting thing now is from last night, which is another reason why, forgive my tardiness today, but suddenly Israel and America are setting off, they're having tests in the Mediterranean. Would this not be seen as something quite provocative right now for all those countries around there? America denied it. And then eventually Israel did actually come clean and say, yes, it was us. Now, Israel have stayed very quiet on this issue for some time, which is quite concerning in one way if you follow the Middle East, because there's so much going on simultaneously in so many countries in that region. But we have to go back to some of the main criteria for why some of these wars are actually being fought and what has happened, and where suddenly things have gone very quiet, actually, Vinny. Libya, we're not hearing very much information out there. We only hear about Iraq when it's so-called sectarian violence. So, we're told, oh, it's Sunni, it's Shia, it's this, it's that. This wasn't happening. I thought that war was supposed to have been won and it was all hunky-dory and settled and great. Well, it isn't. They are under just
mission
as much duress. Well, exactly. But what was the mission? Because the mission is that the country is destroyed. All those people that were refugees, you're not hearing, where did they go? They certainly haven't gone back. And now we're being told we've got 2 million Syrian refugees and an awful lot of them are children under 11. Well, I went out on Saturday and a few people joined me to actually say no to war with Syria in our name. Because that's what it is. An intervention with military weapons is war, because these people, this is their country. Their country is being torn apart by two different factions. One is the incumbent government, and I'm not saying that what they're doing is right at all. I've watched it for 2 years now, and I've watched it morph from what was supposedly a rebel, a rebellion, a revolution. I've watched that hijacked. I've watched it taken over by various factions and Al-Qaeda, whoever you happen to think they are, and I'll leave that open to you to make the decision. But Al-Qaeda are definitely in there. These guys are not playing games over there. They are not being specific in who they're targeting in areas in the sense of any more than the Americans or France or any coalition of killing, another coalition of killing, would be able to target individuals. When you are going in with helicopter gunships, with whatever, sarin gas, if that's true, you can't go, oh, well, I'll just drop it on that person. I won't drop it on the street. Every single internecine war that we have seen has collected casualties. They call them collateral damage. I call them people. And the bottom line here is we should not be interfering in a situation where we have no idea who the players are behind, who are funding, who are supplying, and who are doing any of this, unless there is actually irrefutable proof.
And we've got a couple of seconds left to go to break. Jacqueline Taylor is my guest. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. This all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman.
Welcome back. Okay. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Jacqueline Taylor, otherwise known as Jax. Welcome back.
Hi again. Right, listen, just one last point I would make. Everything at the moment has been put on a kind of pause. So a pause, as far as I'm concerned, with the government's concern, just means that they are thinking about the best way they are going to counter propagandize whatever it is they're going to do. So it's only a breather. What I would really like people to do, and we spoke to it on Saturday and Sunday at various actions, I won't call them protests, they weren't protests, we didn't have anything to protest against. We were actually advocating for the fact that New Zealanders need to wake up for this.
Demonstrate.
So basically, the demonstration is a positive action that you can do as people. And what we need to do is get in touch with our MPs who are meant to represent us, whatever that representation means to you. So whether it's a national, a Labour, a Maori, whoever. Yeah, or a Labour, and need you to contact them. Now, a friend of mine, Penny Bright, and I did an open letter to the New Zealand Prime Minister, John Key, and basically reminding him of that, you know, we're supposed to act within with accordance to international law, and basically we would like you people to do the same. This is what democracy can be like when ordinary New Zealanders say, no war in my name. So what we'd like you to do is to email, phone, Twitter, Facebook, pester, go and sit in the electorate office and talk to their secretaries. Some of these people are actually really nice people. They will allow this. That is what they are supposed to facilitate. And go and tell them that we do not want any kind of support, moral or otherwise, given to a decision to intervene in Syria without very, very good reason. And as far as the information coming out at the moment is, there is no good reason, all right? So that is something that you can do if you do not want your taxes, your moral support given to military intervention. We have enough things to do.
I just question the paradox of the country led by John Key giving moral support to an invasion when John Key doesn't have any morals.
Well, exactly. And
how can he support somebody?
The conscience. The other word that came up for me, which was really sad, was people talking about consciences. I have not seen this coalition government uses conscience yet on anything that has actually mattered to ordinary New Zealanders. So, the things that we need to ask ourselves is, in whose interest is it that we believe the information coming out? Who benefits? Who loses? Who is overtly behind it? Who is covertly behind it? And then when you follow that back, look at what history shows us has happened every time. As Julian Assange said, history is only what you actually know or don't know. And the history that you don't know, I suggest you seriously look up some of these things that we're saying. Don't just take the mainstream media line at the moment, because you are really being fooled. And there will be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, of Libyans, of Afghans, of other Palestinians, I certainly can't forget them, who will be saying the same thing if they had the opportunity to do something like this. Please think with your heads and your hearts together and act. It's no good being against things if you're not willing to do something about it. So whether that be going, talking to somebody, writing a letter, as futile as that may seem, if enough people do these things, every change has always started with one person standing up and saying, I'll do that. Mm-hmm. I'll do that. Okay, so thank you very much. And for all the people, you know, in Syria, whichever side, and this is the problem, whichever side they are supporting, the children have no choice. The children are being killed and hurt and thrown out of their own country. They're refugees. Put yourself in the place of a 9 or 10 year old child whose parents are dead, regardless of who killed them, and put yourself in their position, please. Mm. Thank you.
And put yourself in the position of US diplomats who look at the situation going, there's Al-Qaeda fighting against the government. Yeah. Didn't we create Al-Qaeda back in the 80s? Well, yes, we did. How did that happen? So now we've got to go in and support our old allies, Al-Qaeda, which we've allegedly been our enemies for the past 12 years, who allegedly caused 9/11 when in actual fact it was us.
The last thing on that as well, Vinny, is you also need to follow the money and the oil and have a look. I encourage your viewers and listeners, I encourage them to start Googling oil, to start Googling gas, to start Googling Golan Heights, to start looking at some of the companies and some of the names that are linked to some of the companies over there. You'll be coming up with names like Rothschild. You'll be coming up with names like Rumsfeld and Cheney. You'll be coming up with all sorts of names that are very familiar in other areas. And other wars or interventions.
Let's say it was a repeat of the Iraq War. Okay, there's no business being in there, no weapons of mass destruction. So what we do is invent a reason to go in there by saying that they do have weapons of mass destruction, which we sold them. And then you invade in, you kill a million people, you blow up their water plants, their power plants, their infrastructure, and destroy and disband their army so that there's nothing actually tying the country together, to make sure you destabilize the entire region so that you can send in your private contractors, oil companies, so on and so forth, pay them 10 times the amount that you would an ordinary soldier to drive the same stretch of road, and milk the American money purse essentially out of the thing under the guise of reconstruction efforts.
Exactly.
That's basically what's going to go on here, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is the bottom line. The military-industrial complex, that very infamous phrase, that is what drives this. And take a look at what's happening in America as well at the moment. Take a look at the deficits that they're talking about. Take a look at the fact that unemployment over there and other things, no matter how they try and sugar it, these situations are not improving. If you cross-link all these things, it makes no sense that America would want any of those highly trained military people back from Afghanistan or Iraq or wherever they are at the moment either, to come home to a place where not only are their housing situation is dreadful, the work situation is dreadful, also the veterans aren't even being looked after. Why would they want those people back there as well? So it's a continuous cycle of war. And seriously, in the decades I've been alive, the saddest thing I've realised as I start this little book I'm trying to write, which is very euphemistically called No More War, Dear. It's continuous war. We've lived in decades of continuous war, one or another, by proxy wars so that they're not obvious, or direct war. And Syria is just another step to Iran. And from my way of looking at it, that was already on the table quite a long time ago. If you, again, look up some of the information that is available, freely available out there, all it takes is the connections that you make to actually see the bigger picture. And I encourage you again to look up things like the Washington Institute and actually the pact that we have made here in New Zealand with the Americans since we've had National in Power. And why we are so friendly with them now, and what that actually facilitates, and it really is quite frightening. So there is a YouTube video from the Washington Institute, which is a right-wing think tank, and it actually tells you how they manufacture situations and encourage it in order to facilitate in the kind of interventions we're seeing now. That one really was frightening. It's actually up on my Facebook page. I'll send it to you, Vinny.
Yeah.
And you can put it up with a link.
Well, okay. See, this is the interesting thing, is that all the information is out there. You know, it's not a conspiracy. A conspiracy is kept secret. This is all out in the public, except the mainstream media don't repeat it 1,000 times to the masses, do they?
They do. They repeat the other thing, and that's the whole point. The thing with conspiracy theories is a conspiracy is just an idea with 3 or 4 or 5 people, yeah? A theory is an idea. So a conspiracy theory is nothing as scary as they try. It's not nearly as kooky as you think. It's just an idea that people follow before they follow it through and put it out there. Basically, what's happening in Syria, as another friend of mine would say, is conspiracy theories on steroids, isn't it? Simply because when you look at the kind of people who you can't see, who are stirring the pot there, who are making the comments, who are telling you that evidence is irrefutable, none of them are coming up with the hard evidence. So you could easily propagandize that and say, okay, well, that's your conspiracy theory, as is you are doing this for reasons that you are not actually coming clean on. So, yes, you will find, and notice you flick down. Another thing, just before I leave, someone actually sent me...
What do you mean just before you leave? Aren't you here for like 2 hours, love?
Someone sent me some information, which I have a feeling might even have crashed my computer last night. And it actually was black and white in emails confirming the staging of one of the incidents that was actually on television. And I actually shook my head as I was reading this email, because it was in amongst things like this lady taking her children to a club or to shopping or some kind of sports event, and it was just thrown in, and it was so bizarre that it couldn't have been anything other than true. And I looked at this and I thought, I actually do feel that I'm living in a dystopian world where I'm looking at these things. I'm going to wake up soon. I need to pinch myself, because this can't possibly be real. But the reality is, those body bags, those little people that were in those awful videos, those were real, right? I can't vouch for some of the people who are speaking or who speak to this, who look at you through the lens of a camera and tell you this is happening or that is. But I can tell you that the body bags are real. And when I first started looking at what was happening in Syria, which was over 2 years ago, there was a little boy called Hamza, and someone sent me through the pictures of his body. And believe me, no one could have made that up. No one I know that was in the theatrical world could have made any of that up. It was real. It was said that was done by government troops. On the other side, you know, the stories are, we've seen the YouTube videos, you can't make things up, like someone's heart being pulled out of their body and other things, like you can't make that up.
So, Eaton.
Yeah. This is the stuff that some of us have been looking at with absolutely heart in mouth. Quite literally looking at this and thinking, this is so barbaric. If this was actually put on our screens at 6 o'clock, how can people be so anaesthetized?
Wouldn't it be great if you put that on the 6 o'clock news? Here are the rebels cutting the chest open of a person and eating their heart while it's still beating. Give them your moral support.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, while you feast on McDonald's or KFC or whatever, and I'm not giving them a plug either.
Which is a soft kill bioweapon.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the frightening thing about all of this is out there, but you are getting the selected side of it that suits the narrative that they want you to believe. And, yeah, the mainstream media versions of these events is slowly but surely so Orwellian now. It is so staged.
You know, somebody asked me during an interview once, because, you know, we're in the future right here, you know, we're a day ahead of the States, you know, and they asked me, Vinny, what's it like there in the future? And I say, well, it's somewhat dystopian.
And the bottom line with all of this stuff is, it is happening right now. And yet when you talk to people, they cannot actually get their head around what they see on the TV for other people. Is that is their lives. That those helicopters roaring overhead, that white phosphorus, all that is the life of a child waking up every morning and going to sleep at night or trying to go to sleep. That those are the lives they're living. So while we're sitting here comfortably debating this and discussing the semantics of, well, should we do this, should we do... Every minute we're doing that, those people are living that far away from here. How would we feel? How would we feel? Would we be begging for intervention, or would we be saying, can someone please give the right story out there? Could someone please just take my children and put them in a safe place while us adults nut this out? And I say that in a peaceful way, but sit and discuss and talk. Undoubtedly, every country in the world, you could say there would be certain people who are against their governments, their regimes. But what is happening in Syria at the moment, what is happening even in places like Iraq or Afghanistan, it is so different from what we are seeing here. At least we still do have the opportunity to sit, like I'm with Vinny, and discuss this openly, without fear, hopefully, of someone running in through our door and with guns pointed at our heads.
I think that's because we're not currently at war yet, because you know what the first casualty of war always is?
Yeah.
It's the truth.
Of course, it's the truth.
Now, we're coming back to break. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Jacqueline Taylor, otherwise known as Jax, is my guest. You can check her up on Facebook, and we'll be putting the links up there at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Just bear in mind, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so if you can subscribe for $5 a month to keep the financial means running so we can keep resisting the scumbaggery. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
We're just going to watch a little video that Jax was referring to earlier. Hold on one second, ladies and gentlemen.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II. As David mentioned, you may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS, until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We can do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that. But I'm just suggesting that this is not a either-or proposition. Of, you know, it's just sanctions has to succeed or other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that.
You've got to be freaking kidding me.
So
it's like I keep telling people it ain't a conspiracy because a conspiracy is secret. Oh, my God.
So basically, Vinny, that was the one that defined them for me. And I went and had another look at certain other sort of narratives that were following on from that. And when you hear it from someone's mouth like that, and you know, that is readily available on YouTube, when you put that together with the false false reports that are coming out, you know, from various factions. When you then add the similarity between the talk of, you know, Mr. John Kerry and previous people like Colin Powell during the Iraq War, when you realise that possibly, hopefully, some of the British MPs did do a little bit of homework, and that is why you even got conservative ones to cross the floor. That phrase, cross the floor, is seriously, in all my time in Britain before I came to New Zealand, I could not have been more proud of British parliamentarians actually crossing the floor for that, because some of them must surely have done a bit more homework on this one than some of the others. Now, bringing this back to a New Zealand perspective, we've got Murray McCulley, who is quite weak in terms of he's actually been a lot better in some instances, so I'm not going to be negative all the time, but then Mr. Key, who literally seems to swing whichever way the wind blows. And, you know, can I remind people to look up the fact that, A, Mr. Key was also pro the Iraq War. He is on record, he's on video, of haranguing the Labour government for not participating with the American allies on that. He was also on record supporting Mubarak, which was interesting, and was also something that they tried to downplay very quickly, but I keep bringing that one back up as well to remind people. Where's Hosni Mubarak now? Well, that's an interesting thought, because he's actually out of jail. And what happens, a democratically elected leader, whether you agree with him or not, Mr. Morsi is now in jail, facing exactly the same charges as Hosni Mubarak. So there is a lot of insanity going on here. Coming back to Mr. Key, though, it is well known.
It gets to the point where people are going, are these people insane?
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be asking that question. They should be just saying, these people are insane.
Yeah. And the answer, you know, to Mr. Key is no moral support. No moral support from New Zealand. This is not the way New Zealanders do it. New Zealand has been absolutely held up and renowned around the world for its fair-mindedness and for, you know, its peacekeeping roles. No longer, I would suggest, if people actually took a good look at that. I'm not going to make any more comments, because I do have close friends, you know, who take either side on that. But the information is there. The only thing is, people don't know it. So I suggest you Google, I suggest you look things up, and you find out why journalists like John Stevens are being shut down. Find out why people like Nikki Hager are as taken apart by the mainstream media, and indeed by the, you know, political commentators and the politicians too. Why are they so frightened of these people who do tell us the truth? It's not sensationalist. Everything links back if you look at it. And
well, one would conclude that liars don't like people who tell the truth, because it exposes them for what they really are.
And not just that, Vinny, it's the people that actually look at the words they use and go, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. That the words that you have just used, it's like the little boy watching The Emperor's New Clothes. You stand up and you say, that makes no sense to me at all. If you are saying we are doing this in the interests of another country, in the interests of another people, in the interests of humanity, then you can't say in the next breath, we are doing this as a punitive measure, this is selective, this is only intervention, this is until you do what I want. That's bullying in the biggest, most grotesque way of doing it. And basically, it is using words and deliberately spinning them and seeing them misinterpreted in the media for an end that for some of us is pretty obvious, actually. So at the end of the day, US interests are not what is at the heart of Syria, the security interests anyway. I don't know of any Syrians who've been involved in you know, anything that they can track back, but I'm sure we will see that. And the other point that I really do need to make, because I've just remembered it, is Mr. Key actually prepared the way for us with his WOMD scenarios, you know, as to why we needed more surveillance and more other things there.
Here's the funniest thing. guess what the chemical weapon attack that they allege that the Syrians used was? Guess what the chemical weapon was?
Sarin gas.
No. Sodium fluoride and potassium fluoride.
Really?
This just comes out of the independent and mainstream media.
So,
let's just take that conclusion. Sodium fluoride and potassium fluoride are a chemical weapon. What's in your drinking water purposely by the government? A chemical weapon. What's recommended by dentists to be good for your teeth? A chemical weapon. What happens to be sprayed on all of your food and everything like that in order to make sure that you're nice and healthy? A chemical weapon.
Oh, good God. Okay, so now we've morphed from Orwell to Huxley. So now we're being somered with whatever those things were that I can't pronounce, but let's just call them chemical weapons. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that, the scenario that is being laid for us is... Actually, I think John Key probably got his rehearsal wrong there. Perhaps he should have said that there are certain New Zealanders that were being trained in Syria, and then he would have had a better link. He actually said Yemen. And then left that one floating around in the ether as the reason why certain persons of interest in New Zealand, meant that the whole lot of us actually needed a little bit of extra monitoring and surveillance. Mm-hmm. When you connect these things, innocuous they may seem individually, but when you actually join the dots, this is where, it does actually morph from being comedic to actually being quite frightening. Because if they can make these kind of leaps and bounds and actually make decisions, policy decisions, and, possibly decisions for our whole country based on things like this, it does actually become quite frightening, because when you track all that way back, when will it be, against your country to actually stand up for people like this and go, not in our name? That is the next step. That is the step where then they then say, well, you're not patriotic, you're not this, you're not that. I haven't heard that word here for a little while, although Tao Henare, bless him, did actually, and I keep reminding him as well, so I'm probably on his most hated female lefties list, of people who are against their country. And I said to him, Tao, I'm not actually against the country in any which way. I'm not even against the government. I'm certainly against quite a few things that this government is doing. But if that is what the GCSB is designed to do, having had this amendment pushed through, then I am quite concerned. But thank you very much for telling us all the truth, because we couldn't get that kind of truth out of Mr. Key, but you said it, and that's on record too. So the GCSB will be monitoring people of interest, persons of interest, groups of interest who may be against the country, whatever that means. I don't think it's against the country. I love this country. Every single person I know who has ever got up out of their seat, made a submission, walked the streets, marched, made banners, done anything to that, loves this country, and that's why they do it.
Yeah. Of course, patriotism isn't something that is encouraged by the government at all. And I find that very ironic, considering, you're the government, you're supposed to be leading the country, yet you don't give a frack about the country or its people for some reason, and selling out to foreign interests and getting us to do things that ordinary New Zealanders don't like. And then, of course, here's the irony. You know what we do when we don't like a piece of government legislation? We submit to them. Isn't that interesting? Give us a submission. We're doing this thing that you don't like, so give us a submission. Show us a sign that of your submission. And go, here you go. Here's my submission. Thank you very much. Are you going to listen to it? Are you going to look at it? Are you even going to do anything with it? No. That's why we called it a submission, because all you're doing by submitting is admitting that you can't do anything to stop us. And the other element is, of course, now we've got a referendum, right, on asset sales, for instance, okay? They tried to get 300,000 signatures the first time. Turns out a couple of people doubled in their name, so it wasn't quite 300,000. And then they got another 300,000, and that was enough. And then the government says, well, it's a non-binding referendum, so it doesn't really matter that you collected it twice. We don't really care. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We'll be right back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima'd island-chained paradise of New Zealand, the place where the radiation levels are so high that you can even get a part-time job as an energy-saver light bulb. And my very special guest is Jacqueline Jax Taylor. Welcome back. And we wanted to talk about asset sales. And John Key just puts the ass in asset sale, doesn't he? Because that's what he's doing, essentially. He's selling everybody's ass down the river, and there really ain't nothing anybody can do about it. And that's what I find interesting, is that we're trying to use the legal channels by which the criminals who break the law constantly give us to reject and change their criminal behavior. That seems really ironic to me. At the same time as knowing for a fact that it doesn't work anymore. like there used to be times when, you know, submissions would make a difference, protests would make a difference, referendums would make a difference. And in the last about 10 years, it hasn't changed nothing, ever. Every single bit of the agenda that comes through the government, whether they be Labor, National, Greens, whatever, doesn't matter. The people, your voice, legality, standard procedure, etc., no longer matters.
It's basically, one of the worst problems with all of this, I think, is the fact that people still believe that these kind of things can be changed by them in the old fashioned way, and obviously they can't. As one of the people who did go out on the streets voluntarily, I might add, to ask people and to encourage them to sign the petition for the referendum. Basically, I gave them a choice, and I was far happier talking to somebody who had voted for National, who did put the argument up to me, or, you know, wanted to debate the fact that, you know, the government says they have a mandate. This mandate, unfortunately, is predicated on the one vote either of Mr. John Banks or Mr. Peter Dunn. Mr. Peter Dunn, who didn't, incidentally, with United Future, campaign at all on asset sales. He did not, if you check that up. So that wasn't even part of the United Future's campaign. And Mr. John Banks, who, for someone who represents a party that is supposed to be against big government, it's an absolute farce, really. But anyway, so they said they have a mandate. I say to these people before I try to persuade them or ask them if they'd like to sign, well, if this is so good for the country, how is it now, you know, in retrospect, we have all that money that is supposedly gained from the sale of Mighty River Power going to bail out another institution like Solid Energy, who have literally frittered and God knows what else they did with the money, and the public have had to bail them out and help a company that is basically pulling out of their contracts with them give them money too. None of this makes any sense.
I like it how Pike River's also got a little Illuminati pyramid as their logo too.
Right. And the other frightening thing, and this is sad too, is the Pike River mine was one of the worst, you know, tragedies to beset New Zealand before the awful earthquakes. And I'm so happy for those people, those poor families, if it actually does give them any rest and respite from what they've had to go through, that the government is finally coming to the $7 million, you know, party to attempt to get those bodies back. However, what dampened that for me yesterday was listening to Simon Bridges, who's the minister in charge of that, literally in the same sentence say that he personally didn't believe they were going to find anything or, it was going to do anything. So in that case, I wanted to ask him if I had the chance, well, why are you doing it then? Is this some kind of PR exercise? Basically, just to say, oh, well, the government is kind of listening, even though we have no belief in it. So we'll just give you a bit of, yeah, we'll give you a little bit of money. We'll make that as a sop. Perhaps then you'll be quiet. And then we can get on with the business of doing whatever we are going to do with that. On the other hand, they are then criticizing all the people who worked so hard and the people, even national people who did sign the asset sales referendum, and decrying them for the $9 million it's going to cost to hold a referendum that these people have asked for because they do not believe the government had a mandate, even when they did vote for them. So the bottom line with this is you've got to look at where the emphasis is going and on what they're saying with the money. So they're quite prepared to give $7 million for something they don't believe in for the hell of it.
The closest thing John Key ever came to a mandate was when he went to the big gay out. That's all I'll say.
Okay. But you've, again, when we're looking at elections coming up and when we're looking at how they will backtrack, how they always do, we did this, they did that. We were responsible for this, they did that. You know, they keep hammering the fact.
But how they do that. Yeah. Every single time we get elected, all of the things that we're breaking our promises of. Okay, let's see if I got this straight. We made a promise to do such and such and blah, 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 okay, to correct the mistakes of the people before us and such, blah, blah, blah. Then after they get elected, they go, okay, we're going to have to do actually the direct opposite of everything that we promised because of the people before us who did such and such and blah, blah, blah. And so they get away with not ever doing anything that they ever freaking promised. Because they don't care. They just don't care.
And the most stupid thing is, so they spend the first couple of years of the three actually undoing everything, spending all that money to undo or discombobulate everything that has been done, spend the rest of the time slating the opposition parties. And this actually brings me to the thing right now. It's interesting why they are actually addressing the New Labour situation with such a ferocity and trying to denigrate it so much by paralleling it to things like New Zealand Idol or whatever. And this is a deliberate attempt by the people that are, you know, that run these campaigns, the spin doctors, to actually, in New Zealanders' minds, denigrate the whole process. If you were to do the reverse and do this to the National Party or ACT or something else comes up, it automatically comes up to try and divert from that. So you either get something like the snapper issue or you get told that, no, New Zealanders are totally not interested in anything like that. Well, actually, we are interested. We were more interested in who's going to snoop on us than the snappers. It was shown in the kind of polls. Maybe people didn't submit in the same way as John Key said they submitted on the snapper issue. I made the point, actually, that it's much easier to submit on a snapper issue than it actually is on a snooper issue, simply because they made the GCSB bill so complicated. Yeah. Same thing with the asset sales. They made everything sound as if it was so hunky-dory. I can assure you, having spoken to a couple of National Party voters who won't be doing that again, who actually did buy Mighty River Power shares to help the country to so-called, put money back in and we're going to own it, except they won't be doing that again because they could see now how on earth is the Meridian one off the back of this going to actually make them money in the short term. It isn't. What will happen eventually is people will get so fed up with it. Economic necessity will drive them to actually sell these and the things will be owned offshore. And I'm not sure how that benefits New Zealand in any which way at all.
This is part of a broader agenda. The World Bank had a white paper leaked. It was called 111-Point Plan for Privatisation. And every single country that the World Bank has been involved in loaning money to, whatever, has lost all their state assets, has become a corporate government, and has become more or less some kind of police state. And that's basically what New Zealand's turning into now, isn't it?
Yeah.
A bankrupt, corporate-controlled police state.
Yeah, and one that basically is rewriting laws or amending them to suit whatever's happening at the time. So the interesting thing is when protesters or demonstrators, dissidents or just ordinary people who say, no, not in my name, or no, I don't want you to do this, or no, I'm going to stand up for this, actually go to court and use as a defence, I had no criminal intent. And that is the same. That is the same thing that actually got the people from the GCSB off the fact that they acted unlawfully. So that's one thing I would like to recommend to everybody when they are. And I'm, you know, I'm not talking about being stupid here. I'm talking about things where you are charged with something where you know that you are doing it lawfully, and they are telling you you are doing it unlawfully, and you say to them, okay, well, there was no criminal intent. Prove the criminal intent. I will be really interested when someone uses that as the first precedent, because if the police cannot prosecute people on the basis that they could not prove criminal intent.
Well, that's what the police thought that the Occupy movement was about, criminals' intent.
Exactly, exactly. And they did a real job on them, didn't they? So they did it.
What was interesting about the eviction of the Occupy movement is that you've got Lynn Brown, who was the former mayor of Manukau, and the same cop that I saw unlawfully destroying a building in Manukau when I was down there this one time was the same cop that was up here pulling the media string and doing all of this thing up in Central Auckland. And it was actually Manukau police that were called in, because Central Auckland police said they have a lawful right to be there. They're not breaking any laws, and they've got the right to freedom of expression. And then the chief of Auckland police goes away on holiday for the weekend, and then they come in and they use private security. The police don't lay a hand on anybody. The police just protect the private security from the protesters possibly laying a hand on them, so that the private security can remove all the protesters. And I come up and there's this guy, this one guy, and I've seen him a number of times at protests. He's an evil scumbag. I don't know what his name is, what his rank is, but he's starting to get higher up as he. Here's the thing: if you're a policeman and you're a scumbag, you get promoted. It's just that freaking simple. And as soon as I asked him, what is the reason why you're removing these people? Did not the Auckland Central Police say that they support the protesters and are going to leave them alone? He then cancelled the press conference right then. Didn't answer my question and said this press conference is over. And the mainstream media did not report that. They did report, on the other hand, that a number of the police who were doing the removals had the same badge number.
Yeah. Well, that's another classic. But the other thing with the Occupy as well, of course, is the fact that those same people, I believe, were photographed there, who run the same kind of companies that had infiltrated other protest movements. And, of course, they're all interrelated. The funny thing in New Zealand is you can actually see these links and connections a lot clearer because we're much smaller. So the same people tend to gravitate, you know, a bit like scum to the top of a bath. And you see them and they are more visual. Again, like you, I've got so much information whirring around in my little head at the moment, I can't actually remember. I can visualise the man now who was present at Occupy as well when that happened. Having said that, Penny Bright proved that a citizen who is fairly adroit at addressing some of these issues and understands process can actually defeat
but people, it defeats them in court.
People in court.
Long after Occupy movement is defeated on the ground.
Yes, and that is, again, the sad thing.
And they don't come back.
No, and that comes, in bylines on page 5 or 6 rather than in headlines. So there we go. We've also got to understand who is, who is moving the shakers or shaking the movers in the media too, and who tells them, oh, yes, you can go and have a look and you can go and cover that story. I've met many journalists on the ground, reporters, echo chambers, whatever. You know, some of them are really trying very hard to get some of the information out, some of them not so much. To distinguish between the two, when you actually look in our papers or look in our TVs, is quite hard to do now. So I'm not going to have a mass slaughter on all of the press, because I've spoken to individual journalists and actually been told, listen, we would love to put this up, but the likelihood of this actually making the news or making anywhere in the paper where people are likely to see it is not high. It really isn't.
Yeah. Well, still, I mean, my last paycheck was like $5,000 cash and nearly $12,000. $1,000 in Westfield shopping vouchers. If I can give that up in order to become a journalist who's got credibility, then surely these journalists can give up their job in order to come out and speak the truth. But they can't because they're too freaking cowardly. That's the thing. Regardless of what their intention is, regardless of what their morality actually speaks to them, even if they disagree with the institution for which they're currently purporting the propaganda, if they don't quit, then it is a moral judgment on them.
Yeah, and they're still part of it. And I mean, again, Vinnius, we're sort of going into a different realm again now, but it is one that's sort of quite close to my heart. I've followed journalists like Amber Lyons, who, you know, who is a wonderful lady, who actually did lose her job over, you know, the kind of reporting she wanted to do rather than the kind of reporting and editing people wanted to, change what she was trying to do into. Other people like Glenn Greenwald, who actually had his partner detained in Britain on the say-so of the Americans quite clearly because of the Edward Snowden case. We do have people working under the radar here who fall foul, cross lines, obviously, and do end up in our media. And the saddest thing for me is the fact that their own do turn on them or denigrate them or do just definitely don't support them in the way that you would hope that they would be supported. And again, I do mention people like John Stevenson and other journalists like that who you would think, or even Andrea Vance, who, whatever, regardless of what you think may be the situation there, unlawful processes were followed in spying on her, in trying to shut her up. And where are the people standing up? They do a little two-column ask, and then it's over and done with, and we're on to the next thing. But if we keep connecting all these things back again in a place that is as small as New Zealand and say the same movers, same players, same people choreographing, rehearsing the same people to do the same lines, where is it all coming from? And why suddenly are we towing the American line in such a obvious way?
And indeed, I think I might start a band with a percussion and dance called the Movers and Shakers. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere at all.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The Johnny Cash song, I've Been Everywhere Man, is now being played on US destroyers while they're launching cruise missiles, because they go everywhere, man, and they got a long range, and that's good. Now, talking about the Middle East, the Western powers, what can we even call a Western power anymore? I mean, really. If we're talking about a Western power, it just seems like a slave government of the New World Order. And that's all that a Western nation really is nowadays, because the New World Order bankers control all of our issuance of currency, ergo they control our parliament, ergo they control our policy, ergo they control our military. So there really ain't no actual decision-making process going on here. It's simply following bankster scumbaggery orders. It's the only thing that's going on. There's nothing different, and it has been this way for decades and decades and decades. Every single time, oh, there's a war. What war? Oh, well, one we made up. Well, how did you make it up? Well, we financed both sides of it. Oh, okay. How much money did you collect off of that? A shockingly large amount. Enough to finance another war on both sides too? Yep, that's right. And what else do you gain out of this other than a huge quantity of money? Well, we also gain politically, geopolitical control of the regions, get to appoint dictators that we handpick and select, and also we get our front man to promote social policies that are really in line with our hardcore Fabian socialism type agenda, which really is just a wolf in sheep's clothing way of getting everybody to be lulled into a false sense of security, or we set up a
to the next one.
A tyrannical police state around them and eventually exterminate them and take over the country.
Yeah, I was going to say you forgot about the population cull. Yeah. So it's actually a cheap way of culling some of your population as well by getting them to live in fear. And that's an interesting one again, Vinny, because people aren't going to mention too much about the amount of soldiers and the amount of military who are actually committing suicide, which when you look at the figures from around the
world... Pharmaceutical drugs, mate.
Yeah, is increasing, whether it's by their own hand, whether it's with what they are actually being pumped or having pumped into them just in, you know, to do what they do. The fact that so many of them are sitting behind screens now as well, you know, playing video games that aren't video games and actually killing real people on the ground elsewhere is a frightening new factor too.
It's like Grand Theft Afghanistan.
Oh, God. But, you know, another worrying thing that we just brought up and spoke briefly on is what are all these things as well taking us, diverting our attention from too? So a week ago, as I mentioned, talking about some of the journalists, we were still talking about Edward Snowden. We had the Bradley Chelsea Manning court case as well. Now, as soon as these things seem to drop off our radar, it's interesting, isn't it, that people's minds are so eclectic now and literally having to keep up such a pace, you can't feasibly do it all. So I want to take people back and encourage them to look back to the beginning of the week before last, to where the Chelsea Bradley Manning, whatever you prefer to call him, court case was up there. Since then, we've had the Muslim general. No, it wasn't a general, was he? It was colonel, the one that killed all the American soldiers in Fort something or other. It escapes me. But anyway, he's been sentenced to death, while perversely, the same, you know, a similar American soldier who actually decimated two Afghan villages and killed little children and mums and dads in their bed in the dead of night, he got life. So what we're doing, what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to propose the counter of some of these things and show that things aren't balanced in any way. And if we go all the way back to Bradley Manning, Edward Snowden, the Glenn Greenwald case of them showing us what is happening around the world, how much we're being surveyed and monitored, and all the other distractions that are brought in while all this war talk and planning is going on behind us, we are looking very much at the kind of scenario we spoke about somewhere between Orwell and Huxley, where we can't possibly keep up with how it is all happening so quickly because there are so many of them doing this and so many of us still not even on board with half of it, just going, oh, I don't even watch the news anymore now.
I think that's why they call them Orwell, because when people you know, find out just how bad things are getting and do nothing about it, they just go, oh, well.
Yeah. But, you know, again, the people that I hope are watching and listening to this, you are people that will do. My advice to you is do try to concentrate and focus on one of the subjects that is actually something that you are really, really passionate about and try and follow it through. I find that I'm trying to look in so many different directions at the same time that you can't help but not manage to assimilate all that information and actually process it very well. So if we come all the way back round to the Syrian situation, to the war drums that are beating at the moment, and then just do the satellite issues that are all very much connected with what's happening with the economies around the world, what is happening with the employment around the world, what is happening with the same players around the world who are actually rewriting a lot of our laws and legislation, and it's linked to the corporate, the big multinationals who are basically getting bigger and bigger while the smaller ones are just generally fading out of sight. And as Vinny calls it, the New World Order, you know, whatever you want to call it, this is the situation that we were in little countries like New Zealand, where we think we're beyond the reach of this, but we're actually not. We're being dragged inexorably closer to it through things. Another thing I want to mention just quickly is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. So while Mr. Key and Mr. Cully at the moment in the Pacific, at a Pacific forum, which is very important, meanwhile,
elsewhere, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which is basically one of the biggest corporate money sponges potentially, which is going to suck the ordinary people in so many of the signatory countries dry to the benefit of a very few multinationals, is inexorably moving on. So whether it's farming or pharmaceuticals, any of the other things we're talking about, internet, what we're doing now, you name it, this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement or agenda, as I prefer to call it, taking people's power away, is another thing that is actually, you know, being distracted and diverted from while we all concentrate on, oh, we need to stop this war, we need to stop this fracking, we need to stop this mining, we need to do the assets. Can you see I'm going on and on? So much. So concentrate on the one thing that you think you can get a group interested in, fully focused on. As I said before, when I first came in here, if we go to war, and this one is a big one, which it looks like it could be, then all these other things do, for the time being, pale in significance, but you can't ignore them. So for now in New Zealand, my advice is concentrate on the things that matter, that actually will affect, it's not selfish, but will affect the community that you can feasibly do something about. Contact the MPs in your electorate. Contact the people that you think can do something about this. Keep hounding your media. However you do it, the only way that you get listened to is to repeat. The only way the people who are coming up with all the ideas to keep us down is repeat. All right, propaganda, once it's repeated over and 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 over again, eventually becomes the truth many believe and buy into. All right, on the opposite side of that, if we can go, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true, that's not true, and keep doing it with the individual issues, then I think we can make a big difference.
I'd like to repeat over and over again, conspiracy theorist is a good, intelligent, thinking person. A conspiracy theorist is a good, intelligent, thinking person. One more time, because apparently it's not been repeated enough. Conspiracy theorist is a good intelligent, thinking person. Okay? A suspicious mind is a healthy mind, because if you believe absolutely everything anybody ever tells you, you're not doing any thinking. Hence, you cannot think. You don't develop even the faculty to be able to do so. And you'll notice that there is a connection between those who believe everything the media tells them, okay, and those who are telling them everything that they want to hear, okay? They are a self-supporting little paradigm there. And the complete opposite is conspiracy theorists who go, well, actually, here's a historical context A, historical context B, historical context C, here's some evidence, here's some documents, here's some such and such and blah and blah, and they've got an awful lot of evidence, it turns out, for all of these things that they think. You ask the other side of the equation, well, why do you think that? Well, because I was told that. That's their only thing that they've got. Mm. Conspiracy theorists are good, thinking, intelligent people. They should not be. It should not be an insult, okay? If somebody calls me a conspiracy theorist, like, oh, well, thank you, you think I'm good and intelligent, you know, a thinking, caring person, oh, we're gonna, you know, exposed scumbaggery, oh, yes, I'm a proud conspiracy theorist, all right? Conspiracy theorist means a person who believes, absolutely believes, and you can't convince them otherwise, that powerful people who have a lot of influence use their power to maintain or grow their influence. If you're not a conspiracy theorist, you're a coincidence theorist. And you think that everything happens by accident.
I like that.
There's no such thing as backroom deals, no such thing as bribes, no such thing as lies, deception, manipulation, or cover-ups. Nothing exists. Nothing. Okay?
So we encourage you, look for the truth, seek the truth from facts. But in order to find out facts, you actually have to do something. And one of the worst things for me when I'm asking people, please, will you take a look at this? Will you sign this? Would you read that? Would you please share this? Is the worst answer for me is, I don't care. And you know why? Because when I was a young child, there was a poem that I learned. And it was, don't care, didn't care, don't care, didn't care, don't care, was made to care. then Don't Care did. And this is the whole thing. People go, oh, it's not happening to me. Oh, it's not happening to you. Oh, it's not happening in my near vicinity. Oh, that won't worry me. Well, nothing ever worries anybody and nothing ever happened to anybody until it actually did. So from earthquakes to wars to unemployment to illness to anything, any of these things actually feasibly can happen to any one of us. And if we don't care until it actually happens, it's too late.
Mm. A wolf is still a wolf, even if he hasn't eaten your sheep yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I find is very interesting is having a look at this. On my Facebook status this morning, I don't know if you read it, Jax, but it was something along the lines of there's two things that are starting to really annoy me. Number one is people who get really, really angry with me and fly off the handle for no real good reason. And the other is people who claim to be all about free speech and freedom itself in general, and then they go and support the establishment because they want scraps from the king's table. Mm.
Yeah, and we're living in a world where, yeah, everything has a yin and a yang. Everything has one side and another side. And sometimes before we act, before we do things, we actually need to stop, pause, breathe, think, and then look before we jump one way or the other, because you can't see clearly sometimes when your head is full of noise or when you're listening to 100 different things at the same time. Sometimes the greatest clarity and the greatest clarity of thought comes with just being alone and asking yourself these questions. Who benefits? Who benefits this way? Who benefits that way? Who loses? And at the end of the day, why do they want me to believe this? Why do they want them to believe this? Why do they want us to believe this? And actually see if the same answers come up time and time again. Because in general, if they do, and it is narrow and pinpointed to the same people, the same groups, the same institutions, the same kind of methodology, it's beyond politics. It's beyond left and right. It's just right and wrong. And we know this, and sometimes we just walk away or we shake our heads, we go, oh, I don't want to see that. It fundamentally, as human beings, I honestly believe we know this. It's our choice whether we do something about it or not. But by not exercising that choice, your choices and your ability to do that are slowly being taken away from us.
Mm. Now, you mentioned my three most hated words before, I don't care. My three most favourite words are I don't know.
Yeah.
And my three most valued words for personal growth, I was wrong.
Yes. And never be afraid of making mistakes, because to make a mistake, at least you've got something to rectify. If you do nothing, if you are inert, if you have your head in the seriously, it's almost like not being alive. It's like being inactive while you are alive, but doing nothing about anything until basically it's right in front of your face. And most times when it's right in front of your face, it's then it is you or them or us. Let's try not to do that. Let's try to provide as many solutions as we find things that, you know, we know are not right, things that are wrong. But you can't just be against everything. You have to be for things too. So we need to have solutions as well. And that's the other part of the thinking side of our brains, is it's all very well saying, well, that's not going to work, this is not going to work. Have a way of empowering people that they can embrace, because everybody is useful for something. Mm. We are. And that is the biggest lie that they tell us. It's the biggest lie they tell us as little children, and we grow up believing it. You're useless. You can't do it.
All right. And it's a big BS situation. And you grow up to be an adult that thinks you're useless. We'll be right back after the break.
Bonkers.
Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about insects and violence, and every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts.
And they'll kill you.
Yeah, or they'll kill you. Hold on a second. Can losing your own sense of humour kill you? I was just wondering about this. How many comedians have committed suicide over the years? None. No. I've never heard of a comedian committing suicide. You know why? Because humour's a coping mechanism, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I know that the people you elect to, that are selected to lead you don't care about you. And basically, you know, at the end of the day, they'd kill you as look at you if they could get away with it. And they can, and they eventually will, probably. You know, so this is what I deal with on a daily basis. I'm facing my subsequent extermination with a smile and a cackle on my face, not unlike Doctor Who. And my very special guest is Jacqueline Taylor. Now, you were saying something just before we came back from break?
Which has just completely gone out of my head. But to quote Oscar Wilde, yeah, sometimes if you don't make them laugh, they will kill you, which is quite a frightening thing. But humour is the most important thing. And on a dance floor, believe it or not, between two actions this weekend, I ended up having a conversation with a really intelligent gentleman who our paths have crossed many times. And he said to me, Jax, you know, you can preach and protest and do actions as much as you like, but you are actually mostly appealing to the converted. How about the unconverted? And I went, you know, that's true. That's right. Some of the things that I do, I put online, and I know, preaching to the converted. So some of the people that I actually want to reach, who may not necessarily watch Vinnie's show yet, but I'm going to encourage them to, are the ones that I actually really do want to appeal to, because these are the swing voters. These are the people who are actually starting to consciously wake up, and despite the decisions they may have made in the past to vote for this, that and the other, based on the information and the knowledge that they had at the time, they are not foolish people. They are not stupid people by any means. And when they can actually track back what they were told was going to happen, what has happened, and what they are now being told, you know, should happen next time, but there is no guarantee, they will be able to make their decisions based on the probability and the fact that history is probably going to say exactly as I am to them. But you know that's not true. You know that's not true. And here is the evidence to prove that is not true. Don't believe me. Do it yourself. So basically this person actually said to me, you know, getting one person on side who actually does not vote for National, who does not vote for Obama, who does not vote for the New World Order, who does not vote for war on Syria or intervention, whatever they choose to call it, who does not vote for this, that, or the other, that person is as valuable as 10 people who were already on your side.
And they also, incidentally, have a big target painted on their back.
Exactly. And the other thing that this person said, and I've heard this a few times, and again, as I began, when it came in this morning, I said jokingly, except it wasn't a joke, and I was listening to Radio Live. It's literally my radio station flicked to Radio Live as I was coming in. And one of the journalists reminded me that one of the journalists on there on Friday had actually said that he was having drinks with a couple of National supporters who had been fishing. And they were discussing asset sales, and they were discussing, in particular, the Mighty River Power Float. And these guys had said to him, oh, no, we're definitely going to buy shares, blah, blah. And now, presented with the next one that the government wishes to sell, they have actually changed their minds. So that is two people who were very pro, who were totally for asset sales, who have now made a decision based on what they thought, on what they were told, on what they decided of their own volition and did, now they are not going to buy that same story again. That, to me, is a result. Again, the same guy said to me, I have gone against my family, the party that I voted for, based on a couple of things that have happened, a couple of policies that have just been passed, which I looked at and I thought,
actually, this is not something that I agree with, and it is not something that I'm going to support. Now, having that told to you at 2 o'clock in the morning was such a bonus for me. I think I smiled all the way home, because it is those people that we need to reach. It is those people that we need to not be in their faces, not berate them, not shout at them, but actually say to them, come on, you are much more sensible than this. When you are being told this is good business, this is good economics, this is, you know, good policy, ask them to look back on what they can actually see, on what they can prove themselves is not the case, and actually ask them, why would they be that foolish to buy into that? Once is a mistake. I don't know what you call twice.
Once is a mistake, twice is a coincidence, three times is enemy action.
Thank you. But Vinny, you know, as we've discussed, it is the people, all right, who will change things. It is the people, not the people at the top, it's the people at the bottom. But for them to change anything, first, what we have to do is we do have to get them to care. And how we do that is we have to make all of this relate to them personally. So it has to be a personal thing. It has to matter to them. To care about something, you have to personalize it, and you have to touch on the things that people care about, whether it is for them personally, for their family, whānau, for their community, and get them to care that way. It's the only thing that has ever, ever changed things.
You know, it'd be lovely if each and every single National supporter was arrested unlawfully by a cop, or had all their money dry up or something like that because of a corrupt business person. And then when they try to report that business person to the cops or the government or the ombudsman or something, they get the runaround and nothing ever happens. What you need to do is ensure that all these people who think that the system is behind them to become victims of the system, then they start to realize the system for what it truly is. And so, you know, if I prayed, and I do on occasionally, just when I'm really in good spirits and having happy times, and I think to myself, you know what, I've got it too good. God, please send me some suffering. Please send me, please send me some scumbaggery. Please, like, deprive me of my income or something like that. And surprisingly enough, when I pray for those things, I get them. When I pray for good stuff, no. But
I'm the opposite. I am totally the opposite to that. But what I would say is I do agree with Vinny on that one thing. There was an item on the news yesterday where I think it was a serious fraud office said, we have acted on this particular case because the perception is New Zealand is there is no corruption in New Zealand. Everything is transparent in New Zealand. But I nearly curbed the mags on my Mini. I was like, what? Seriously, they have acted upon this. What happened with so many of the other cases where accidentally they seem to have forgotten that there is no corruption, there is no transparency? Ridiculous.
They always name them what they do. So the Serious Fraud Office runs most of the serious fraud in this country, and including the serious fraud of saying that there is no serious fraud in this country. Okay, well, hold on a second. Why does the Serious Fraud Office exist at the same time telling us that there is no serious fraud? Haven't you just put yourself? Why are we still funding you, bro? If there ain't no serious fraud, or at least what you're telling us right now that there is no serious fraud is actually a serious fraud by the Serious Fraud Office trying to seriously fraud you.
And with the transparency, why are we trying to sign deals, or why are we negotiating them behind closed doors? Because, of course, if all the information got out there, people wouldn't like it and they might protest or they might try and stop it. Well, surely if the deal or the agenda is one that is in the interest of the whole country, of all of us, the people, we'd be delighted about it. We'd be absolutely celebrating in the streets. Wow, bring it on. This must be a most amazing deal. Apparently not. So when we are looking at things like that, let's look for the words, and let's look for the reinterpretation and the misinterpretation of the disinformation that we're actually given as information, because it isn't.
Right. There are two general rules, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be reasonably correct. Number one, anything that comes out of an official source, assume that it's the exact opposite of what they're saying it is. Number two, if you can't make it by yourself at home, then it's a soft kill by a weapon.
And we're going all the way back. Not all weapons of mass destruction are ironclad
all come in form of a gas either. Yeah. Some of the worst weapons of mass destruction are actually words of massive, yeah, deception. And we are certainly getting plenty of those. We are getting bombarded with them on our airwaves. We're seeing it on our TVs. And most people, sadly, are not even aware of some of the words that they're actually filtering into their common usage, which are actually not true. Mm. So that is the one thing, as I suggest people go back to the basics, Janet and John stuff, and think, what was I taught that word meant? Look it up in the dictionary. And if what it is being told to you as in the context of a sentence you've just heard makes absolutely no sense at all to you, then it probably makes no sense at all, because common sense isn't that common these days.
That's why I call it platinum sense, because it's the rarest element on earth.
Yeah. So what we can do today, what we can finish off today, is as people, we do have the power. We have the power that's innate in ourselves to know right from wrong in most of the most fundamental things, all right? Basically, if it's not going to be good for my neighbour, it's not going to be good for my husband, my partner, my child, it probably won't be good for me either. And if people are telling me, no, you can't do that, no, you shouldn't do that, then look at why. Look at why they want you to look at it that way. Always look at both sides of an argument and never think that you're infallible. Never think that you're right. Never think that you're wrong. Somewhere in the middle of that is the truth, all right? And all you have to do is think for yourself, at least think. Thank you.
We'll see.